Hello, and welcome to The Game Is About Glory. I'm your host, Milo, and joining me is Ram. Hello, mate.
Hey, Milo.
Back from the game. Did you have a good time?
Yeah, I had a really good time, actually. I got to see our very own Steph before the game. We had a bit of a chat and a bit after, and then another mate of mine I was sitting with who used to be a season ticket holder. So, yeah, it was a little bit of a reunion of sorts, and then topped off with what ended up a comfortable win.
Well, thanks for rushing back to join me to talk about it. So it's a win that saw us return to fourth, return to the top four, and we still have a game in hand on fifth place Aston Villa. So a really good way to end a weekend where actually quite a few results went our way. Before we start, during the match, we learned that former Spurs defender Joe Kinnear passed away this afternoon, age 77. Joe joined as a teenager in 1963 before making his debut in 1966. He spent 10 years at the club, winning the FA Cup in 1967, the UEFA Cup in 1972, and the League Cup in 71 and 73. Joe made 258 appearances for the club before spending his final season of his playing career at Brighton. When his playing career finished, Joe had a successful career in management, taking charge at Wimbledon, Luton, Nottingham Forest and Newcastle, amongst others. Joe was diagnosed with dementia in 2015. So rest in peace, Joe. We're sending our love to you and your family and your friends. Right, so should we move on to the Forest game? And as normal, we'll kick off with, well, what did you think of the game in a nutshell?
It was, I want to say the word bewildering to some extent, in that we started off well, we scored, we conceded a bit of a goal, very much an unexpected goal. It all went to shit for a bit, and then we came on, we made some subs, and then in the second half we kind of showed the dominance that we should have shown, you know, throughout the whole match, and we got the result in the end, and it ended up being very comfortable.
Yeah, what he said. Yeah, I think I kind of saw it, yeah, pretty much the same. The first 25 minutes I thought we were very comfortable. Their goal changed things, and for the last 15-20 minutes of the first half it was very nervy, and we lost our composure, which is one of the things that we've, you know, been pretty reliable with. And then the changes at half time meant that we went out and dominated the second half and scored a couple of lovely goals. In terms of kind of team selection, so we've just got one change. We've got Saar coming in for Bentancur. Richarlison was injured, so Scarlett was on the bench. What do you think of the team selection? Were you surprised that there's a change from the West Ham game? Or?
Not really. I think when you've got players like Saar that are ready to come in, then I don't think that, you know, for me, that's not a case of, unless he's like coming back from an injury or he's been really off form. But for me, you know, making that change is a bit of a no-brainer if you've had, you know, you've had a game midweek and then you're coming in on the weekend. So I think that was, yeah, I was quite happy with that change. Obviously, Bentancur, I think is a phenomenal player. So putting him on the bench is never like, it's not something you know, you'd normally like to see. But I'd say that would be doing a disservice to Saar to say that it wasn't, a suitable change.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the one rotation we're seeing quite regularly at the moment. The rest of the team seems to be pretty settled in terms of who's first choice. And maybe that changes and Deki comes back into the frame a bit more as a starting player. But yeah, as it stands at the moment, this seems to be the one rotation that's happening to our starting lineup. And I suppose we've also got to bear in mind that we're probably trying to manage Bentancur's minutes after the injuries he's had over the last year. And That would be sensible, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that, Milo, actually. Is that the case, do you think, that it is just managing his minutes?
I think there's that. I think there's quite nice differences in the two of them stylistically in terms of their strengths and weaknesses. And we've spoken a bit about how Bentancur probably makes more sense against low block teams, and Saar probably makes more sense against teams where there's a bit of space, or we're trying to, we want his energy in terms of closing down and breaking up play.
Yeah.
I think probably the other thing is managing Bentancur's minutes and making sure that he's not overworking himself. I don't think we're going to see the best of Bentancur again until next season. I think he probably needs a pre-season to really, you know, regain the form that he was showing last season before the injury.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I agree. So we've already said that we started the game brightly, and Werner forced Murillo to score an own goal. That's become, the kind of trademark ball across the behind the defence that seems to just create panic everywhere. How were you feeling during that first 25 minutes?
I was feeling comfortable, which has not been, which is, you know, recently hasn't been a feeling that I felt like watching our games, because we've either conceded early or we've, you know, we've not really come out of the blocks like we were in, you know, the first 10 games of the season. So I was feeling really comfortable, and I was really enjoying that we were playing on the front foot. We weren't turning back, and we were really always trying to kind of, we were probing. I do think it helped that, I think Forest, you know, Forest didn't set off with a low block. They didn't come to kind of, you know, kind of contain us or anything. So we were finding space. I thought Werner especially was getting a lot of space, and, you know, he was able to run at the defence. So yeah, I was generally feeling quite comfortable. And after we scored, I think I lulled myself into thinking we could get a few here today.
we did in the end,
you know. But what I should have noticed was there was a few times where Forest, you know, did get in behind us, and they you know, and they played some nice football, I have to say, in that first half. That, you know, before they scored, actually, there was a few like bits of passing and stuff that I was quite impressed with. There was some filth from one of their players, I can't remember who now, but I think he nutsed it might have been Biss, I can't remember, but yeah. But you know, I thought that they obviously came to play, and that helped us. But in general, feeling very comfortable.
I made the mistake of thinking when we scored, thinking, well, if we keep a clean sheet, this would be really good. So that was my... and yeah, I agree. I'd say, I think the other thing that really impressed me in that first 25 minutes was you know, how quickly we were regaining possession after losing it. So yeah. Kind of the counter pressing after losing the ball and regaining possession, particularly, you know, really high up the pitch, was you know, a consistent mark of that first 25 minutes, and really encouraging. And we were creating some good opportunities there. And I think Forest were really struggling to live with that, and that would be the kind of thing that you see where, you know, it's really wearing down an opponent because you just can't clear your lines.
And actually, some of our movement and some of the pace, you know, in our passing in that first 25 minutes for me was very reminiscent of the beginning of the season, when we were, you know, kind of steamrolling teams a bit.
Yeah, I agree. It did feel like that. And, at that point, I was quite excited, thinking, well, it'd be really good to put in a 90-minute performance.
Yeah.
Which brings me to, after being in complete control, Wood's goal seemed to completely change the flow of the game. You know, before we were recording, we were talking a bit about that. I think it's probably actually worth us actually just looking at the goal and then kind of thinking about the after effects of it. So Udogi is kind of primarily to blame. He loses Alanga, doesn't follow him, and then the ball goes through Van de Ven and Romero, leaving Porro Markel trying to rush across to cover Wood, who, you know, ends up with a pretty easy goal. So what do you think happened after that?
What we were talking about just before we came on, I think we've been used to, or I've been used to, when we've conceded a goal, it's generally either been expected because we've been under the cosh a bit, or it's been in a game that's been ebbing and flowing. So, you know, it wasn't completely unexpected. I think we were so comfortable and dominant at the time when Forest scored, when they equalised, that I think it was almost like we were perplexed by it. And it was like, you know, like if you almost robotic, where you give a robot like some new information that it hasn't had inputted yet. And it's like, well, what do I do with this? You know, and I don't, and that's not being disparaging to the
syntax
players or
error.
At all, but yeah. but I feel like we just didn't, it was maybe a slightly new situation where we were like, okay, well, this is completely out of the blue. What do we do with this? And unfortunately, we really went within ourselves. And and Forrest, you know, Forrest started dominating. And my mate John, who was sitting next to me, he just turned to me at one point and said, "We're getting dominated by a Nuno team." And I was like, "Yeah." I didn't look at it in that way at the time, but until he said that. We just lost our way. It was a bit bewildering considering how well we'd started.
So with the players who were around at the time, no wonder they were perplexed, thinking, yeah, this is a Nuno team. Yeah, I mean, I think that's right. I think, you know, we completely lost composure, didn't we? And our ability to, you know, one of the things, our greatest strengths is the way we play out from the back. And that was rushed and panicked. And, you know, even Kuti was kind of slicing balls out of play.
Yep.
And, you know, panicking and trying to play kind of long balls to clear the line. And it's a complete antithesis of everything we normally do so well and what we were doing in the first, first 25 minutes. And I was surprised. I think it's the first time I've seen us do that under Ange. I can't think of another occasion where we've...
I agree with you, Milo. I mean, even like, for example, the Chelsea game, you know, when with all the chaos of that, we still were trying to play our game, you know,
Well, you think about, say, the Luton game last weekend where, you know, they scored, you know, a breakaway goal or you know, admittedly, you know, early in the game before we'd kind of exerted control over it. But the reaction to that was pretty calm, actually, I thought. I thought we dealt with that quite well last weekend.
Without trying to, you know, be a body language expert or anything into it, I did notice when Forrest scored, as the players were walking back to the halfway line, they did seem very downhearted. So I don't know there could be a thousand and one reasons why that is, you know, or they were just generally annoyed that they'd conceded, which is probably the most logical explanation. But I thought, oh, that's really hit them hard.
Do you think we should be concerned with the ease that Forrest scored the goal? You know, is this becoming a habit? Because, you know, we're talking about that Luton game there where we've got a counter actually down the same side as this goal came from. And we do seem to be giving up these opportunities. You know, there's a few of these most games, aren't there?
Yeah. I think, well, this is the kind of conversations I'm having outside of the pod with other Spurs fans, which is an interesting conversation to have, which is, you know, I know that we're quite aligned with Andrew, where we're like, we need to trust the process and, you know, and he will bring results and he has, and, you know, and there's a style of play and it's a very set style of play. And by Andrew's own admission, we will encounter games where, you know, things might not go according to plan. But then, you know, I speak with some Spurs, like my mate John as well, who was with me, he says, that's all well and good, but, you know, this is the Premier League and maybe at some point we do need to kind of have a think about how we kind of work around things, like whether it's, you know, in a situation where we're under the cosh and we need to kind of, you know, sort of keep composed, which again, we have been doing. And I get that argument as well, but then I do think, do people say to Jurgen Klopp or to Pep Guardiola, you know, oh, you need to change your ways? Because I don't necessarily think they're fluid in their tactics in terms of, you know, I'd say they've got a very set way of playing. And yeah, it is a concern, Milo. But I'm tempering that with the fact that we're, what, 6-7 months, maybe a bit more into this kind of new way of playing. We've had the same conversations about Conte and Mourinho, you know, we've gone, oh, they just need time, or oh, okay, no, we need the players or whatever. So I think we can afford to give Ange time, but also if this is still happening next season, then it is a big concern for me. But I'm willing to kind of play the time game at the moment and say, you know, we're still 5 or 6 players away from the team that is hopefully going to be shaped to how Ange wants to play at the level he wants it to be playing at.
Yeah, I mean, I think all positional sides, all teams that try to kind of control and dominate play, and you know, particularly when you're you know, you're getting players forward around a deep set team, you're moving the ball to try and break them down. All teams like that are susceptible to being hit on the break. Yeah, that's one of the risks with that way of playing. And I think Ange's sides are probably a little more at risk of that because he commits more players to the attack than comparable managers. So probably, you know, Arteta and Guardiola are probably the two closest in the Premier League. And we're putting an extra man in the attacks most of the time than they are. So we're leaving less at the back. So we're more likely to be outnumbered. And I think Ange would say that, you know, that's an accepted risk of how his teams play. And, you know, if we win 4-1 or whatever, it doesn't matter because we've won the game. And I think it was maybe not the case this week, but certainly, you know, against Luton last weekend, I think what he'd also say is you've got to be better in possession and not give away the ball to allow a counter-attack. Yeah. And, you know, that's how you Yeah, that's how you prevent it, by being better better with the ball in the final third and not giving away those opportunities. So I think it's probably, you know, if you're looking at, again, that kind of Luton goal and the one today, there were individual mistakes in both of those, you know, against against Luton. Biss commits to the challenge on Townsend, doesn't make it, and Townsend knocks and runs past him. And then today, Udogie doesn't track his man. And obviously that needs to be dealt with. And that, yeah, it's not a systematic failure, because yeah, it's individual mistakes. But I do think that being hit on the counter is something that will be a feature of, you know, Angie's size all the time he's at the club.
Yeah.
And I don't think he's going to change that. I don't think he's going to have an extra man back.
No, I agree. I don't think he is. And you know, like you said, these are individual mistakes. Like with Udogie, I thought he was uncharacteristically a bit loose today a couple of times, you know, and he got kind of turned, you know, just a couple of times, which is a couple more times than he normally gets turned in a game. So you know, and I don't necessarily think he had an off game, but he, you know, he was getting forward well. And I think sometimes maybe that's, he was just as comfortable as I was in the stand. So maybe, you know, he got caught out and then we were kind of, you know, we were on the back foot a bit after that. I don't want to keep going back to it, but considering the last 3 or 4 years, I'll take us being a bit susceptible on the counter-attack and what we're offering up now to what we've been offering up for a while prior to that. So
yeah, I suppose, you know, the other thing you say there is if Romero or Van de Ven's legs were closed, then there's probably not a goal.
Exactly.
You know, it's
well, you know, like I said to you, Milo, like I've only seen it live. I haven't seen any. At the time, I wasn't.
And it was at the other end of the, it was on our end, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was in front of me. But like, because it was so against the run of play, and it did happen quite quickly, and I was like, oh, that goal felt like no one was really at fault. It was just one of those things, you know. And I did see the ball go through the legs, but I wasn't aware at the time that, you know, Udogie had lost his man and stuff, because it all just sort of happened around me. I think I was, at that point, I had my legs crossed and I'm reading The Guardian or something.
if only Van de Ven had.
Yeah.
Ange made a double change at half time with Højbjerg and Bentancur coming on for Sarr and Bissouma. What do you think his thinking was with this?
I think we needed, and I think he said it in his presser, you mentioned, I think we needed something different in midfield. And that something different was a bit more pace in the release of the ball, and a bit more energy. Perhaps I was speaking to Steph after the game, and he mentioned that maybe just a little bit more, just a bit more confidence and experience as well. You know, and Højbjerg does, you know, provides that as well. So I think that was maybe the thinking behind it. I thought Sarr, you know, his running and movement were great in the first half. I don't think Biss had a bad game. But I think with Biss, maybe, you know, it's that release of the ball. He's got a good pass on him. Like, he sprayed the ball a couple of times in the first half, you know, over to Werner, I noticed. But I think it was bringing in Bentancur and Højbjerg just upped the energy a bit. And I'm guessing that was what Ange wanted.
Yeah, I think, I mean, the Wood goal, I think, came as a shock, and we were clearly in shock for the rest of that half. And I think probably part of it was just another shock to try and jolt us back into life. And I think maybe the other issue was that, we were having trouble playing out, and, you know, central midfield need to provide options for the defence, and we were struggling with that. So maybe, again, a change there. I mean, realistically, Ange tends to sub off all of the midfield in most games anyway. So that probably would have happened within kind of 15 minutes or so of the restart. Anyway, you know, through the game, so he's just bringing that forward. But yeah, I think it was probably to change that. I think in terms of kind of releasing the ball earlier, I mean, I think there's a place for that, and Højbjerg's kind of the best of our midfielders at a long range pass. I think Ange wants control. He wants to build up from the back, so, you know, that's why Biss is preferred to him, and I think he'll continue to be preferred to him. I don't think this game is going to change that.
No,
because Bissouma allows that kind of short range passing. He's got the strength to hold off players and allow us to build up from the back and play through and control a game like that. And that's what, and I think, is Ange's after.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I don't think it will change anything in terms of, you know, Højbjerg coming in. I think Biss will still be a, you know, starter. I do want to commend Højbjerg though. I think I thought he had a, you know, when he came on, he had a good game. He's very involved. He's always been very vocal, you know, and so it was that as well. But like, I thought he was really involved with everything good that we were doing in that run up to the second goal. And Bentancourt obviously, but with Bentancourt it's almost expected what he brings to the table. But and they're both aggressive as well, which I think we needed a bit more of in that midfield.
Yeah, I mean, Forrest's probably one good spell in the second half came after a Højbjerg misplaced pass. It was around the 80th minute.
Yeah,
where we were playing out from the back, he scuffed it, and then there was a crazy kind of minute or so after that where Forrest were up and we were struggling to clear the lines. And I think that's, you know, that kind of scuffed pass is why he's not starting games very often.
Yeah, it is. That's exactly right. And I did make a comment when that happened. I was like, oh, well, right. He's had his 25 minutes or so. Yeah. But yeah, that is the reason. Yeah, I think it's like, that's why I don't think he'll replace Biss in the starting 11, you know, anytime soon. But I think as options, I was surprised by the double substitution, but as you know, I thought maybe Bentancur would come on his own, but like, you know, Bentancur obviously, but it's good options to have coming off the bench to, you know, to change a game or to change tack, you know, in terms of like what we're trying to offer. And you made the point earlier, Milo, about how, you know, what each player, you know, what players offer, and when you talk about Sarr and Bentancur and why, you know, they both offer different things. And I thought in this game today, bar that minute, that bewildering period in the first half, you know, Sarr at the start was driven, you know, he was giving us energy, it was great movement, and then as you mentioned, second half we got the low block and Bentancur came in, and you know, and he was making things happen. So I think that this game actually was a perfect example of what you were talking about at the start of the pod in terms of what those two players offer.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose there's a four, you know, Højbjerg, Bissouma, Bentancur, Sarr, that, you know, none of them are photocopies of each other. They've all got different skill sets, and it's a nice option to have to be able to change it. I think that's the other thing Ange said in his post-match press conference, was that, you know, for the first time probably this season, he's got options from the bench and he can use them now. And, you know, he said with this, he's got those options. So he thought, you know, why not use it? So I think also we've got to probably commend him. I think this was quite a brave sub, a bit like against Luton, where he took off Madison when the scores were even. He brings on Lo Celso, and then we end up winning the game. You know, with this, you know, to make these changes, when you're making those kind of changes, I think they've got to work.
Yeah.
So these are quite high stakes moves, and at the moment they're coming off. But yeah, I think it was brave of him to do this. And
it's brave. And we've been crying out for a manager to do that. You know, how many times have we lamented like previous, you know, managers not making subs or not making changes when we really need them, you know, and he's not afraid to do that. And it seems like he's on a hot streak of, you know, good subs. So long may that continue.
So we said the change seemed to work and we dominated the second half, scored a couple of goals, including an absolute thunder bastard from Mickey, and so a really nice goal from Porro as well, which is, you know, it's amazingly his first goal of the season. You know, he's been taking shots, he's been getting chances, but they just haven't quite been landing for him.
Yeah.
Two questions really. So what did you think of the second half, and on Mickey's goal in particular? You must have had a pretty good view of that from where you are. Was he right in front of you?
Yeah, right in front of me. He had a lovely view of it. Had no idea where it went. I had no idea it was going there. I was almost looking at the other side of the goal to see if, you know, if he gets this on target, it will go to the keeper's left. But yeah, in terms of the second half, I thought I was really impressed that with the changes that were made, and I thought we pressed and we were very aggressive, and I think we, especially, you know, Sonny being the trigger point for the kind of press, I noticed it. It's where I sit. It's quite nice because you get an overview of the whole pitch, the moment, you know, Forest players, when his keeper was passing out from the back, you just saw Sonny the trigger go, and then it was like a swarm, you know, coming towards him, and you know, and that is an. Also why we're sometimes susceptible to the counterattack, because it is literally like a swarm of hornets coming at you, you know, and then if it just takes like a couple of either decent balls or ricochets or something, and then, you know, the opposition team breaks free. But I thought we had a remit with what we needed to do when we came out. And I thought we were really effective with that. And I felt that, I mean, Mickey's goal, it was, when it came to him, I was like, okay, he's gonna, I thought he, you know, he'll try and place it, or he'll at least go to the, you know, like go back across goal. But just going to that near post and just absolutely, it was a wallop, but he meant it, you know, and it was really, really well struck goal. And I think it came at a good time, because I think we were getting to a point where it was like we needed to score, because the crowd was still with the team, you know, and everything, but I could sense there was a bit of like, oh, is this going to be another one where we're just like nervousness, and we're just going to be playing across them or whatever. But as soon as he scored that, you know, the relief was palpable, and it couldn't have happened for a better player, you know, and he really sort of gave it to us as well in the stands and everything. And
it was a good celebration, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was, yeah.
I'd say, and another one where we've, you know, we get a couple of goals in quick succession. There's 6 minutes between Van de Ven's goal and Porro's goal. Porro's goal's on the 58th minute. And yeah, after the hour, pretty much we put the game to bed.
Yeah, definitely. And I think with Porro's goal, it's hard to believe that that's his first goal of the season. Mm. And also, it reminded me, because we I think we're all agreed he's been one of our players of the season.
Yeah, definitely.
But at the start of the season, we were wondering whether there'd be a place for him, because he's, you know, he's, we were like, oh, well, he's not. He's... Okay, a
Some
few of us.
Were.
I mean, yeah, I know. I was wondering how he'd get minutes with Royale in the team, but yeah, you know, like it's been, he really deserved that goal, and that was, I think it's maybe slightly unfairly overshadowed by Van de Ven's goal, but that was it. I think that was probably
technique
a harder,
was fantastic, wasn't it?
Technique. It was incredible, you know. And actually, what do you think? Was Bentancur his header? Was that? Did he mean it to go across goal, or do you think that was sort of a? That's the only thing I wasn't sure about. Either way, it's not an issue, but.
Yeah, I think I think he probably did, but maybe I'm being charitable. Yeah. But Porro hitting that on the half volley is just superb technique.
Yeah.
Absolutely superb technique.
Yeah. And again, another brilliant celebration, and you know, and he it was really, he's obviously a fan favorite, and we really celebrated that goal with him. But it's really effective, that kind of, you know, when we run at the defense and we go to the byline and, you know, and cut it back, it's it causes all sorts of problems. And, you know, we've got, when we're not doing it enough, it's really noticeable, because then we start worrying about, well, we're not taking shots, we're not doing, you know, why are we trying to score the perfect goal? But actually, you know, when it comes off, as it did on a number of occasions in this game, you can really see why we persevere with it.
Yeah, I think actually it's been one of the improvements as the season's gone on. I think earlier in the season we were struggling to get in behind, and part of that was probably down to who was starting. And I think, you know, Johnson and Werner have really, really helped with that.
Yeah.
I think there's been an improvement with it as the season goes on. I think it's one of the areas of our game that we can expect to see improve next season. I think if we make the right signings in the summer, that'll make it easier. You know, that'll help with it. But I also think as the players get more used to the system and we've got more ways of doing it, and, you know, unfortunately, the kind of passing across, a deep set defence in order to try and create those openings is in order to create these chances. And I know people don't like it, but I'm not sure what people expect us to do against a deep set defence. If a team has come to sit deep and, you know, and make it very, you know, deny you space and make it difficult for you to get through, I'm not sure, you know, what people think we can do about that. I mean, obviously, you know, you can play quickly when there's space to attack, but once they're set back, once they're, you know, in position, that you've got to find a way through.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, our game plan, same as City or same as Arsenal, would be to pass it across and then try and create those gaps, try and engineer those gaps through into play, and then, you know, create overloads so we can get in behind and create those opportunities. I'm not sure what other options there are, really.
Well, this is it. And, you know, I get frustrated, you know, like when we're passing it across the across the, you know, the width of the pitch, trying to get make a thing in, and it is frustrating. And but that's where sort of I kind of reconcile it is when a team is playing, any team in the Premier League has got a solid low block going. City struggle, you know, and Liverpool struggle, and it's so it's not a case of like we're just not very good at penetrating a low block. It's like every team will struggle, and that's not a deficiency on the team trying to penetrate. That's just, you know, the Premier League is a very tough league, and you've got players that, you know, maybe teams that aren't necessarily creative, or, you know, they're not like top tier level teams, but they know how to kind of sit back and soak things up, and so it's a patience game, isn't it? But I get it. I get frustrated too, you know. I don't take it out on the team. That's not really my sort of that's not my remit, but it is frustrating because, you know, you kind of like, oh, and I think for me more, I'm more frustrated at, I get sort of maybe a bit chippy about the other team. I'm like, well, what, just come out and play. Why are you doing? You know, it's more a case of that than, you know. But I think also, I think when City, maybe that's a slight difference between teams like Liverpool and City and unfortunately Arsenal, is that just because they're further down the line than us. That, I mean, they have players that, which we're getting to that level, but they have, you know, when you've got players like Foden, De Bruyne, you know, that these sorts of players that can pick something. I mean, Grealish as well, you know, that they can just do something out of nothing. But I think we need maybe a couple more players of that ilk to kind of come in and be able to do that. And Madders, you know, I put Madders in that level, you know, and I think, and you know, but we're getting there. It's all. I think someone once said, "Trust the process," and so we got to do that.
Yeah, I think that's it, isn't it? It's about having. I think it's about the bench as much as anything. You know, what City are so good at is that they're plugging away. They're not, you know, being able to break through, and they can take off a player, and the player coming on is as good as the one going off, and they've got fresh legs and fresh ideas, and they carry on plugging away, and then they find that gap, and then it all opens up for them. And, you know, I'm sure the plan for us will be a similar one. And we just need that depth all the way through the side.
Yeah.
Ryan Yates and Maddison had a bit of a ding-dong battle all the way through the game. This might be unfair because I'm not sure how much of it you could see in the stadium. We had a kind of brief chat before we started recording. Yeah. You know, it started quite early on. Yates got a foul for Maddison on the... got a yellow for a foul on Maddison on the halfway line quite early on. And then later on, he alleged that Maddison punched him, and he went down and was motioning for the ref to go and have a look at the monitor, which probably should have been another yellow card. And then later on, Yates pushed Maddison in the penalty area. I think he also had a little go at Højbjerg as well. What did you make of it? I would say, was he getting, did our fans pick up on it? Was he getting any treatment in the stadium?
He got a resounding boo as he, we did pick up on it for sure. I think the fouls on Maddison early on, it was good. He got, you know, it was good that the yellow was given that, you know, that quickly. I think Maddison is such a clever player as well, because I think he gets himself into these positions where you almost have no choice but to foul him. And it's not like he's going anywhere necessarily, but he's just so good at, like, it's just like the way he turns, and it was a bit of a ding dong. I didn't see, like, you know, like I said to you before the pod started, I didn't see any punch. I didn't see actually what happened. All I saw was, I saw Yates like fall to a heap on the floor and spend a long time down there, and then at the moment he went down, I did see Maddison very angrily sort of gesturing to him to get back up, and, you know, and then once the space cleared, it was when we were like, oh, we weren't quite sure what happened. As soon as he started motioning for VAR, then he got pelters for that, rightfully so. And he should have been booked for that again. But I think that it was once he did that, I thought, oh, it's nothing. Because he's obviously made a bit of a show of it and not got anything. So now he's got to kind of reiterate.
Sky had Roy Keane in the studio today, and after the game, they asked him whether it was a punch, and he just looked, you know, kind of, call that a punch? That's not a punch. Yeah, I'll show you a punch.
No, I thought, you know, I think Maddison's very good at he knows how to play that game, and he plays it really well. And I remember when he was at Leicester, it frustrated the fuck out of me. You know, but he knows how to do it. And he's not doing anything untoward. He's not doing anything like, he's not being sneaky. He just knows, you know, how to put himself into positions which do cause what Yates did, you know, which was to get an early yellow card. And then I thought he was lucky to stay on the pitch.
Yeah. I mean, say for the punch, I'm doing air quotes here. For the punch, I mean, Maddison does turn. He does motion towards him. He brushes him. What it wasn't enough was for him to hit the floor, double up.
Yeah.
He made the most of very, very little contact. And VAR had a look at it. So.
Oh, they did. Oh, yeah. Okay, fine. Yeah. When the ref called them both together, did Maddison do something then? Because that was near the Forest fans. That was obviously on the other side, and they got a bit shirty with Maddison over. I don't know whether he like pushed Yates's hand away or something at the start, or when they were chatting to the ref. But then they both kind of gestured and when the ref called them both over to sort of sort it out.
He refused to shake Yates' hand after the yellow card early on, I think.
Right.
Yeah, I think there was words. I'm not quite sure.
Did end up like touching hands, you know, like sorting it out. I think it's always, I never like seeing, you know, the whole gesturing for VAR now and stuff like that. I mean, it's just, it is unneeded. But if Maddison did that for us, did that, I'd be like, well, yeah, he's got a point, you know.
I wonder if...
Why isn't the ref going over?
I wonder if that's creeping into kind of kids' game or amateur game in the same way that waving imaginary cards did. You know, people doing that.
It must be.
People without VAR are motioning for VAR.
Yeah. Well, we do it. It became a funny thing, like on, you know, if you're with mates or something and someone does or says something contentious, and we've started, you know, kind of call for VAR. So I think, you know, I mean, everything else gets into the kids' game, you know, like, you know, everything, the Ronaldo celebration, the gesturing,
pointed to the sky. It was like, yeah.
This is for my pet gerbil, Harry. May you rest in peace.
What did you think of Forrest?
Like I said earlier, I think, you know, and I'm, you know, and considering that Nuno's the manager, and maybe this is being a bit unfair, but I think they've got some good players. First of all, you know, like is it Gibbs White? He looks exciting, and you know, and they did come to play, I think, initially, you know, and I think maybe because they were getting a little bit of, they were finding space, you know, behind us and things like that. So they were what I expected them to be. I expected us to dominate them in the manner we did, sort of in the second half, you know. And I hope that doesn't come across as too arrogant, but like, you know, I think we are sort of a level above them in that sense. Mm. But they've got some decent players, but I think the comfortableness sort of shone through in the end, and I think, you know, we deserve to win.
How do you feel about Nuno? So it's his first trip back since he left. How do you feel about him?
It was just such an odd time, wasn't it? There was, the club was in a bit of a state of disarray. I remember with the whole manager search, you know, there was such a big emphasis put on that, and we were going to get a world beater. And then we announced Nuno, and it was like, oh, okay. Okay, this is the direction we're going in. But, you know, and they, you know, they tried to make it like, oh, no, we've done an extensive search, and we, you know, Nuno is the man. And then it kind of became apparent he was sixth or seventh choice. And then, you know, he had his first sort of video, you know, like vignette.
I'll make you proud.
And it was like, oh. We won the first three games, didn't we? 1-0. Yeah. But I think what is... this is my take on Nuno and the whole situation now, looking back on it, is that I don't recall us giving him even any sort of reception today. I'm sure maybe there was a warm reception when his name was called or anything. I didn't notice it, but it all seems a bit of a damp squib, wasn't it? It was
trying to write about history or something.
Yeah, almost.
Yeah,
and that's so, you know, it's unfair, like, because I, you know, this this job was too big for him.
Yeah, absolutely.
He had no business, sort of, especially at the, in that moment as well, when we were making quite a big claims about who we were going to get in and the type of manager we were going to get in, and then we ended up with him, and I think he was on a hiding to nothing anyway.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah. And I mean, stylistically, I think he was a bad fit as well as
yeah, and, totally.
And I think it's pretty clear that the players didn't respect him.
Yes, yeah.
And, yeah, I think he struggled with the dressing room. I don't bear him any ill will. He seems like a nice guy, and I don't particularly like his football. But, yeah, I don't bear him any ill will. I just don't want him anywhere near my team.
Yeah. Today's fine. He can be in the other dugout.
Come on then, one positive, one negative, 30 seconds.
All right. Oh, okay. So, I mean, the negative has to be the
15 minutes of madness.
The manner, just how we reacted to that. You know, I think I really don't want to see that again. You know, let's go back to being composed and kind of, you know, not just kind of being bewildered by the fact that, you know, team managed to score against us, like, completely against the run of play. But then the positive was, for me, was the second half, because I think after that, you know, we were at the end of the first half, we went into it having been, you know, dominated and not been at our best, but to come out the way we did, and kind of dominate and have two defenders scoring goals as well, you know, I thought it was a very accomplished performance in the second half, and made it very comfortable.
It's hard to disagree with your negative. So it's got to be kind of our reaction to conceding, and really, well, if that's repeated, I think that is a problem, because you know, you are going to concede goals in football. You've got to be able to deal with it. And you know, one of the beauties of the way we play is, no matter what the match state, our tactics are the same. We don't sit back and try and see out a game. We don't, you know, our tactics are always the same, so the players should always know what they're doing. And we lost that for those 15, 20 minutes, and that's a concern. And the positive, I mean, I agree with the positives you said, but, you know, for a point of difference, I'll say, you know, the subs at halftime being decisive and that working and that kind of changing the flow of the game. I think it was quite a brave thing for Ange to do, and it really paid off.
Yeah.
Right. Should we move on to the week that was?
Let's do it.
And we'll start off with Son Heung-min has been nominated for the Premier League Player of the Month for March. Sonny scored 3 goals and got 2 assists in the month, and he also won this award back in September. And Ange is up for Manager of the Month for March too. He's up against Arteta, Iriola and Jurgen Klopp. Voting is open until Monday at lunchtime, so get voting. Surprised?
No, not surprised about Sonny. You know, the stats speak for themselves there, and he's really come back. Yeah, he's been really, really positive influence for the team in general, as we've spoken about. But he's been great. He's also today, just to mention, they had kind of a little ceremony for him pre-match for his 400th appearance. It was really lovely. That I think it was 3 ladies came out in traditional Korean dress, and they'd like, one of them had like a percussion, so they made a bit of a deserved big deal about it, actually, and it was really nice seeing. I feel sad that he didn't score, because I think it would have just topped off like a perfect afternoon for him. I just actually want to commend the club for that. That was a really nice touch, and it was really warmly received as well by everyone. And it couldn't happen to a nicer and also a more popular player for us. So he definitely deserves it. And Ange as well. Yeah, I think it's interesting. Like, if you ask, you know, a lot of Spurs fans, myself included, when you think about, you know, the month, and it almost feels like it's been I thought it was a disappointing month.
We won 3 out of 4 games.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't understand where my thinking was with that. But, and also, like, you know, coming into this game being just 3 points behind Villa with 2 games in hand, like, that kind of creeped up on me as well, you know. And I don't know, like, it was it is deserved as well. You know, but I don't know where I had this idea that maybe we'd had a bit of a disappointing month, but maybe it's just because we drew with West Ham. We should never draw with West Ham.
Did you see the video that the club did for Sonny put out on midweek.
Yeah.
It was lovely. Lovely with the two.
It was really lovely, yeah.
And some ex-teammates, Kevin Vimmer turning up.
Yeah. It really was. It's a measure of the man that, you know, like, you know, the you know, we make such a big deal for him and his ex teammates turn up. Yeah.
Completely unrelated to Sonny, but while we're talking about kind of club, like social media content, they did a virtual reality headset thing with Emerson Royale and Richarlison, which is really funny. They've got a virtual reality headset on. And within the VR world, they're walking out on a beam off the side of a skyscraper, and Emerson Royale's really scared of heights. And all the while, he's crawling along the floor because he's scared. And Richarlison's kicking him while he's doing it. So, and saying that when I'm doing this, I'm going to samba out to the end of the pole and all this. It's worth watching.
Is this on there on socials?
It's on the club's YouTube channel. And
okay, I'm going straight to that after this.
It's only a kind of 10-minute clip or whatever, but it's just. I mean, the two of them are really sweet together. Anyway, it's funny. Yeah.
That's brilliant. Oh, I can't believe I've missed that.
Report back.
Yeah, I will.
Joe Lewis, sorry, another high wire act here. Joe Lewis has avoided jail and has been fined $5 million after pleading guilty to insider dealing. Lewis had tipped off girlfriends, pilots, friends and personal assistants to buy shares in companies where Lewis had inside information. Federal guidelines suggest that the sentence between 18 months and 2 years in prison, but both the defence and prosecutors urged leniency, citing Lewis's guilty plea, cooperation with the authorities and poor health. The judge said his crimes were serious and strike at the integrity of the markets, but said that circumstances did not warrant prison. Probably a big relief for everyone.
I think so, yeah. I think when this all came out, my first question was, does it affect the club? And when I think it was you in our chat said no, and I was like, oh, that's all I need to know about that. Is this over years or is this a recent thing?
Yeah, I think they've been investigating it for a while.
Girlfriends,
yeah.
I was like,
yeah,
right.
So, I think this is probably the moment where the Enoch Out and MAGA movements kind of combine in their hatred of the of the New York judiciary. And it was always going to merge at some point, but I think this is that moment.
Yeah.
Obviously, the judge was some Levy stooge. So that's the
oh yeah yeah.
And finally, our trip to Anfield has been moved so that it can be shown on the telly. It will now be a 4:30 kickoff on Sunday, the 5th of May. And we have a date for our trip to Stamford Bridge. It will take place 3 days before the Liverpool game on Thursday, the 2nd of May, and will be a 7:30 kickoff. So the run of games now is what, Newcastle, Arsenal, then Chelsea, then Liverpool.
And we've still got the City game.
We've still got the City game to find a home. That's probably going to be midweek in the last week of the season, I think.
Yeah.
I'm sure that the Chelsea game being played on the 8th anniversary of the Battle of the Bridge had nothing to do with Sky and the Premier League picking this date, and it'll be barely mentioned in the build-up to the game.
I'm just happy that, you know, we'll get to see more of Lamella's shithousery in the lead-up to the game.
Yeah. I think Angie's going to give any talk like that a short shrift, isn't he? He's not going to have it. Thanks, mate. That was fun.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Milo. And also, I just want to say, I was really nervous about coming on and, you know, because normally normally it's you and Steph, and I just add a bit of nonsense in between. But now I'm adding the nonsense as on an equal footing. So thank you for looking after me.
It's a different dynamic with just two, isn't it?
Yeah.
Anyway, I enjoyed that. We'll be back next week to chat about our trip to St. James's Park and all the other Spurs news. So thanks for joining us, and we'll see you then.